Mr. Malone, through with Pam Hino, that you're not waiting for any clients to observe the Zoom arguments. Is that correct, Mr. Engels?
It is, Your Honor.
Mr. Malone, is that correct, sir?
That's correct.
All right, then I think we'll get started. Our next case is A22-1140, Randy Hook Appellant versus Brenda Hook individually and as representative of the estate of Roger Hook, as well as Pheasants Forever. Counsel, as you are aware, all parties will have 15 minutes to make their principal arguments, then counsel for the respondent will have 5 minutes for, counsel for the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. For those, I'm sure you're also aware that there will be an audio recording of this argument, I think, available as soon as tomorrow, but anyone else is prohibited from making their own private recordings, so please respect our rules. With that, whenever you're ready, counsel for the appellant, you may begin and just start by telling us who you are in a loud, clear voice, sir.
Thank you, Judge. And please, the court. My name is Paul Malone. I'm a lawyer in Slayton, Minnesota. I represent Randy Hook in this case. We started this case. Randy Hook is a stepson of Brenda Hook. We initiated a claim based upon an assertion that Randy Hook owned firearms that were being disposed of by Brenda Hook. With respect to that action, I also named Pheasants Forever, who had received the weapons from her, and the estate, Brenda Hook, in her representative capacity. A dismissal motion was filed, and I hope I'm not too redundant, but it was filed by Brenda Hook, and Brenda Hook is personal representative. With respect to that motion, Pheasants Forever didn't file any response, but Pheasants Forever showed up through Mr. Engels and made oral arguments. With respect to this, obviously, Brenda Hook and the estate have filed no brief and are not appearing. Pheasants Forever, in this case, did file a brief, whereas they filed no brief in the trial court. The issue at hand is the first filed rule. And I think we all agree on the first filed rule that can apply if you have concurrent jurisdiction, as could be the case here. You have the same parties, the same subject, and the same rights. And the purpose of that is obviously for judicial efficiency and comity and avoid multiple dispositions or determinations of cases and have consistent decisions.
Mr. Malone, can I interrupt?
Certainly.
Perhaps before you get to the merits of that issue, you raised a point about Brenda Hook not filing a brief, and I somewhat assume it may be related to the fact that after the argument in this file that the probate proceeding was the appropriate location for resolution of this issue, she had then filed a motion in the probate court after your client then objected also formally and raised the same issues in your client's petition in the probate proceeding, that it's not appropriate there either. But now I see through the public access, the district judge has issued an order in the probate proceeding after your reply brief here that indeed will allow your client to go forward with the issue related to conversion of these guns. And so I guess my preliminary question to you is, how does that change the status of the issue before us, the fact that the probate court appears now is going to fully address your client's concern?
Well, it does in part, because the issue, or the big problem here is same parties. And Pheasants Forever, Mr. Engels argued in his responsive brief that he wants to argue a good faith recipient of these firearms, and he's not present in the probate court. So he could be foreclosed or have rulings against him, which are inconsistent with... We'd have inconsistent decisions. But Judge, to some extent, your point, I accept it. I filed the action in probate court. I wanted to have a court that I could be in someplace for a fair trial with all the parties. And I didn't want to be foreclosed. I think there may be a shorter statute of limitations on conversion or on fraud, and there may be a period of time on claims. So in order to try to protect my rights, I made a motion asserting similar actions in probate. And those are proceeding. I shouldn't ask questions, but is a probate proceeding all part of the record for this, or how does that work? I probably should know.
No, our case is the civil file, but obviously because the whole issue is concurrent jurisdiction and the references to the probate file and so that's why I was curious what if that changed. I did somewhat presume, as you just commented, that you might have had to preserve the claim somewhere, especially when Brenda Hook objected in the probate proceeding after winning in the civil proceeding by filing this appeal. But I wondered if the fact that now you have an opening, what appears to be an opening in the probate court, does that change your client's position in terms of your desire for us to resolve this appeal?
I still think it makes a lot of difference, Judge, that's proceeding. But I still think then that Pheasants Forever and Brenda Hook individually are left out of the probate proceeding. And so it still remains my position that the best place is district court and the court that has jurisdiction over all the parties, which I understand the first filed rule, that's the purpose, is to get everybody together in one place, resolve all the subjects that are in dispute. And that's what we're trying to do here. So, yes, it does make a difference. I'm not out in the cold if you guys rule against me. You guys, I'm sorry, it's inappropriate. But if the court rules against me. To some extent, it makes a difference. But otherwise, again, my argument, this is relatively short. This is the only court, I think, that has control of all the parties and all the subject that determine all the rights of the parties. And certainly it helps avoid multiple determinations and inconsistent decisions. I really don't have I do think Mr. Engel's argument, for example, that he wants to argue a good faith recipient of a firearms, and he also has cross claims against Brenda Hook and Brenda Hook's estate. I mean, Roger Hook's estate. If there was a ruling regarding his arguments, both on the cross claims and the good faith in probate court, where he's not a party, he might be might not be satisfied with being ruled, having a ruling against him where he couldn't participate. But other than that, basically, that's what I got to say.
Thank you, Mr. Malone. I see no questions from my colleagues. We'll move to counsel for the appellant. You'll have 15 minutes, Mr. Engels.
Thank you, Your Honor. In the police court, I appreciate the thoughtful comments on the appellant's argument. I guess from our perspective, we think that the threshold issue here really is whether ownership of these firearms. And we think that is best resolved in the probate estate. From my client's perspective, I think as well as from the appellant's perspective, if you had conflicting rulings on that, that certainly affects what our position is relative to, clearly if the estate owned or Brenda Hook owned the firearms, then we don't really have an issue with Pheasants Forever. If they didn't, then, potentially there is a question then of course of whether or not we were a good faith purchaser. And that also, I think, can be determined by the probate court. I think now the issue of us being able to participate is a real one. And I acknowledge certainly that part of Paul's argument is there. I think it's important to look, though, at the overall status of this, that, the probate court can determine the threshold position, the threshold issue of who owned the firearms. They can grant a good share of the relief sought by the appellants. Theoretically, the probate court could determine that Pheasants Forever should return this property, much like it could ask, a bank or other party who held property owned by an estate to bring it back into the estate. But it seems that it belongs really to avoid the issue of conflicting rulings on these issues, as far as particularly as it relates to ownership and who needed to do what related to these probate assets, that belongs in the probate court. And as Your Honor has indicated, my understanding that is up for a trial in March of this year. So we would simply ask that, and I would also note that I think the probate court could certainly determine as part of that trial that some of these issues are not properly before that court and allow at that point, the appellant to renew their action. And, you know, in a civil court, for those issues that don't belong, that the court would determine that don't belong in the probate court.
Mr. Engel, I'm assuming as of right now, your client's not a party to any particular, to the ongoing litigation regarding this issue in the probate court?
And that is correct, Your Honor. Mm-hmm.
But would you believe that you obviously have an interest? You mentioned the good faith purchaser, so obviously there may be a point at which you would wish to intervene, I assume, or somehow become a party to that proceeding to interpose that defense.
Yes, it certainly could be the case, Your Honor. Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Judge Larkin here. I have a question. What do you anticipate might be the issues that a probate court would say, well, those don't belong here, you should go back to civil court? Keeping in mind that there is no probate court. There's a district court that hears probate cases. So I'm having a hard time understanding what issues couldn't be handled by the probate judge. It seems to me this is more about, you know, should all these issues be heard by one judge, the judge who started the probate proceeding? I'm having a hard time understanding what issues could not be tried in the probate case.
Right, Charlie. So I believe Judge Slater had looked at the Judge Dietrich's order. And my reading of that is that she did find that some of the claims would be the appellant, or in this case, the petitioner, would be entitled to a jury trial. And sure, she thought that those would not necessarily be appropriate for determination in the probate file, because there obviously isn't a provision for a jury in those matters. And so whether that was whether it was the damages issues or the issues related to some of the conversion claims, that perhaps they would have to be heard in a separate process to allow the appellant the right to a jury trial.
But wouldn't that be as simple as just having the probate judge set a trial on those issues before a jury? I mean, it does seem like you don't need to go back and forth between two different judges on this stuff when there is technically no separate probate court, or, you know, no issue that the probate court, I hate to even say probate court, because there is no probate court. We're just talking about a case that has some civil common law issues and some issues under the probate statutes. And I understand that there might be different procedures attendant to each, but I don't understand why you need to have separate judges.
No, I certainly would not be making the argument we need separate judges, Your Honor. I think you're
understood.
Exactly right. Yeah. Again, my argument to today is fairly short. I think that the issue with the first, with the first to file rule is an issue of efficiency and comity and avoiding conflicting rulings. And again, given that the core issues of the dispute are before the probate judge, and as Judge Larkin has noted today, that she's able to resolve these other issues and allow for the various rights of the parties to be preserved, we would ask that this court affirm the district court's ruling and allow this matter to proceed to resolution, and which is really scheduled for trial, as I understand it, March 9th of this year.
Thank you, Mr. Engel. Seeing no other questions from my colleagues, Mr. Malone, you'll have the last word, sir.
Excuse me. The counsel indicated that the probate court could order Pheasants Forever to return the guns. Given the status of this, and where they're not a party in any probate, and again, it's district court proceeding in probate court, however, they're not a party to that. And I don't know how they could be ordered to do something by a court that, where they're not present or having a chance to make an appearance or make an argument. And the district court, initial proceeding that I started, takes care of that issue. Same is true with Brenda Hook. This was transferred by her individually. And I don't know if she's claiming that was probate assets or how she got hold of these guns, but the transfer was by Brenda Hook, not by the estate. So those are, no discovery was conducted, none was answered. And so we have a bill of sale by Brenda individually, so we sued her and the recipient of the guns, and I think that's the proper place as a district court.
Mr. Miller, Brenda Hook was the PR. Are you saying she Are you saying there's an argument she did not have authority to do what she did?
Well, the transfer was by her as an individual, and there's nothing in the record indicating how she acquired the bill of sale attached as an exhibit is by Brenda Hook.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. And it may be transferred out of, it was an informal probate. There's no record or anything showing informal probate transfer to her or anything else. But she's the one that made the transfer. Basically, that's all I have to say, judges. Thank you for listening to us. If you did.
Seeing no questions from my colleagues, we thank Mr. Engels and Mr. Malone for the thoughtfulness of your arguments and your willingness to proceed a little early today. Thank you very, very much.